Saturday, May 11th is World Migratory Bird Day in our part of the world. It's a chance to turn our attention to the creatures that liven up the landscape while they're here, but they're not here all the time. Klamath Bird Observatory, based in Ashland, will observe the day with the Rogue Valley Bird Day Festival at North Mountain Park in Ashland. Here's our chance to talk birds with people who know them well. John Alexander is the Klamath Bird Observatory Executive Director, back in the studio once again. John, good to see you.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Jamie Stevens is KBO Science Director. Good to have you back in the studio, too.
Thank you.
So, well, let's talk about World Migratory Bird Day and the overall goal, if you will, of it, John.
Great. This is exciting. It's the 25th anniversary of World Migratory Bird Day. It's a single global bird conservation education campaign. And the idea is to bring attention to one of the most important and spectacular events in the Americas, which is bird migration and this incredible movement that's very dynamic of birds from their breeding grounds to their wintering grounds and back each year. Each year, World Migratory Bird Day has a conservation theme. And this year's is to protect birds and specifically to be the solution to plastic pollution. Plastic is getting a lot of attention now in the media, which is fantastic. And so what I really like about this year's theme is that it's really solution-oriented. So as opposed to just saying these are what all the problems are, it's actually presenting what the problems are and giving us opportunities to do something and be the solution to plastics in our environment and their impacts. And so each year we partner with the city of Ashland and others around the region to have a celebration of bird migration and at Rogue Valley Bird Day.
So the solution to plastic pollution, I mean, and the artwork that comes with World Migratory Bird Day referencing this theme shows water, obviously, and seabirds. But is plastic an issue for inland migratory birds as well?
There are some issues with the birds using plastics for nesting materials and things like that that can be interfering of it in their nests and whatnot, though a lot of the focus really is on plastics in the oceans.
We have a couple local examples of birds that are right here locally that are being influenced by the plastic pollution problem. So some of the birds that you might be familiar with is the belted kingfisher. It's a common bird along our rivers. And one of the concerns for the belted kingfisher is entanglement. And one of the plastic problems with our local rivers and some of our urban areas as well is kind of not only trash, but also fishing line that gets left in those riparian areas. So belted kingfishers can get tangled up, as well as killdeer, which can use both riparian wet areas as well as urban areas. And then the osprey, a very common bird that people often see along the rivers, is one that's known to be using them in their nesting material. And so when you get pieces of plastic in the nest, it can cause some dangers to the nest, to the nestlings as they grow up.
Are we talking about plastics getting inside the birds that live inland like these?
No. So those examples I provided are more a problem with entanglement and actual external dangers. The ingestion, as John mentioned, is largely a problem with ocean-dwelling
species. Okay. So entangled, yeah, they're just getting stuck, basically. Mm-hmm. They can get stuck in fishing line and bag material and that sort of thing.
Yeah, and get drowned.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. So let's come back, Jamie Stevens, to the basics of migratory birds and why they do migrate. I mean, why don't birds stay in one place all year long?
So about 40% of our birds that we have here locally are migrants. Some of those are long-distance migrants, some of them shorter distance. So they're doing it largely to follow resources. And so while our residents are well prepared to maintain their life throughout the winter conditions here, our neotropical migrants go to areas with more foraging availability, more food resources and conditions. And so they're able to have kind of the perk of having all this availability of resources over the winter. And then they migrate back largely along what they kind of call the green wave. As the foliage greens up from south to north, our migrants follow that. And they follow the food resources that come with those plants as they move north.
Would they have the same resources if they stayed in their wintering grounds?
So it's a trade-off. It's a very big trade-off. So the birds that stay here on the wintering grounds have a different dynamic. You know, they're here earlier, and so they can start breeding earlier. Their breeding season can arrange itself accordingly. And so they might come back with a more the neotropical migrants might come back with a kind of boost of energy from being able to have all those resources along the way, but they also face a lot of risks along the way. And so migration is also very dangerous for animals. So there's these trade-offs between those life history decisions.
I would bet some of the risks include predation.
Yeah, predation, as well as weather events and disorientation as well. There's certain things that go on that have largely been exacerbated by humans over the last century that can make the migration pathway itself more hazardous and make it more confusing for the birds to get to where they're trying to go.
We're talking about birds on the not quite the eve of World Migratory Bird Day. That'll be Saturday, May 11th. Klamath Bird Observatory will have the Rogue Valley Bird Festival at North Mountain Park in Ashland. Jamie Stevens is the science director, John Alexander, the executive director of the Klamath Bird Observatory. Questions, comments from you about birds and why they migrate and how they're observed. 800-838-3760 to join the conversation by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. I should explain, Klamath Bird Observatory is based in Ashland, but this implies that you cover the Klamath bioregion a fair amount. What is the range of the activities you do at KBO, John?
Yeah, we've been doing bird monitoring and research in this region, the Klamath-Siskiyou bioregion, for over 25 years now, and our range is Roseburg to Redding and the Great Basin, the west side of the Great Basin, the upper Klamath, all the way to the coast. And then we also serve bird conservation needs and partners throughout the Pacific Northwest and through a decision support system we call Avian Knowledge Northwest. And our training programs take us throughout the Western Hemisphere. So we work with partners where our birds winter to help build grassroots science-based organizations, bird observatory-like entities throughout Mexico and Central America, and we've been in the Caribbean and Northern South America.
So you get to visit the birds where they are in their wintering zones, Jamie?
We do on occasion. A lot of our international work is also capacity building, though. And so we work with a lot of partners that are there locally doing grassroots types of things like we do and helping other bird observatories kind of build that capacity in their home ground.
Are bird observatories common enough that pretty much every part of the continental United States is covered by one?
Yes, there are more bird observatories out there than people would imagine. We just had the third International Bird Observatory Conference, and bird observatories, there are bird observatories in Africa, in the Middle East, in Asia. There's some very exciting historic bird observatories that have been monitoring for decades and decades in Europe. And there are new bird observatories now, really. There's a bird observatory, like the Green Wave, there's a bird observatory wave happening in Central America and Mexico now as well.
Do you do work like banding and things like that to help you track the birds that, that come into the region?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of our longest running programs is our long-term monitoring, and a big piece of that is bird banding. This summer, we've got a crew on of 5 student volunteer interns, 2 of them international, visiting here from Mexico, and they'll be operating our long-term monitoring program at 6 banding stations throughout the bioregion where we capture the birds, and then we're able to get really good information when we have them in the hand as well. The types of information you can get from birds when you can look at their health and fitness in the hand is a little bit more detailed, a lot more detailed than what you can get just by observing them in their habitat.
So how many birds do you think you banned in a year?
Somewhere around 100,000.
Just through Klamath Bird Observatory?
In total, yeah. We banned about 10,000 birds a year.
10,000 a year.
And so we've now have a data set of hundreds of thousands of birds that mm-hmm. we're tapping into now.
Talk about the banding process, because I'm sure that people who come out to see this at the Rogue Valley Bird Day on Saturday will get to see it, if not actually participate a bit.
Yeah, they'll get to come and see one of the banding stations in action, and the one that we do for Migratory Bird Day is a demonstration project so that the public can see what we do, science in action. And so we'll have about anywhere from 10 to 12 nets up, and the nets are a really kind of fine mesh. And so If you're walking through the forest as a person, you might not even see them. And that's the idea, that the birds can't see the nets. And so when they bump into the net, they just kind of gently tumble into the weave. And then we go and extract them from the net. And then from there, we take the bird back and we'll put the band on it and take a number of different measurements and look at the age and the sex and the health. And that'll be something that we can show to the visitors as well. And so it's a really rare opportunity to get to see birds up close and get to see that science.
Do you ever get to visit with the same birds again? Do you sometimes get birds that are already banded caught in the nets?
We do. Now, the recapture rate of a banded bird within the same season is a lot higher than within years. And so while the importance of recapture data is one of the ways that we can understand if birds are surviving the winter, that's kind of the most tangible example of how that science can be used. We also do get the rare reports of where our birds have been captured at other banding stations as well.
We're talking birds in a big way here on the Jefferson Exchange. World Migratory Bird Day coming up on Saturday, May 11th. Jamie Stevens is the science director at the Klamath Bird Observatory based in Ashland. John Alexander, the executive director. If you have questions, everything you ever wanted to know about birds might be able to be answered by the two people in this room. Join us at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Any lingering effects from the banding of the birds, from their capture, from tumbling into nets, any of that stuff?
No, it's a very safe procedure, and so it's something that's being applied around the world and has been for decades and decades and decades. And we put a lot of things in place to make sure it's safe for the birds.
We're a part of a group called the North American Banding Council, and the Banding Council puts forth guidelines and recommendations, and one of the really important things about bird banding is the ethical approach to it and making sure that bird safety and our approach to that is foremost in our training programs. And that's why we're recognized as one of the best training programs in the country, or actually in the world, because we put forth these training materials and these processes that have been recommended by the North American Banding Council. And it's all about getting the best possible science, making sure we do something with that science. We're not just banding birds for the sake of it, and that bird safety is the paramount thing that all of our protocols are all around, making sure that we're benefiting the birds by banding them.
I've seen the banding process up close and watched the birds fumble around in their little cloth bags while they're waiting for their banding. They seem mildly annoyed, perhaps, but otherwise okay. Let's talk about the information you pick up, though, and I wonder if over the life of the Klamath Bird Observatory and your time there, Jamie, for example, if you've noticed some changes, some clear trends emerging from what you're seeing with the birds that live in and visit the region.
Yeah, we have a couple different papers that have come out over the last couple years. I think one of the things that is great about our regional banding project is the ability to track trends here in the Klamath-Siskiyou bioregion and locally at some of our sites and put those in the context of what's going on more broadly. And so we're seeing kind of large-scale declines in bird populations. Some of the reports that have come out have suggested that a third of our forest birds here in the West are in decline. And so we have some good local information about how our birds are faring to use kind of in tandem with some of these larger reports that are coming out as we think about potential conservation actions.
You had mentioned earlier, we were talking about migratory birds in particular, about disorientation, and I want to expand on that just a bit and find out what kind of disorientation we're talking about and what's causing it.
So birds use a handful of different metrics to help them migrate, and so they'll use landscapes to understand. Some of them have a learned process of how to migrate. They use the stars, they use the sun, and then they use something called magnetism as well, where there's this aspect biologically that allows them to understand the magnetic field. And so a lot of that disorientation, one of the more tangible ones to think about is light pollution. And so our songbirds migrate at night, and they migrate all night long, flapping their wings continuously, and they do that to avoid, largely to avoid predation. And so as they're migrating at night, they need to use the night sky. And light pollution of large cities can kind of disorient their ability to read the sky.
Do we know about the magnetic mechanism and what sorts of organs might be present in birds that help them orient to the Earth's magnetic field?
My understanding is that there is something called, it's slipping my mind, but it's in the eye. It's largely found in the eye, and possibly some of the older science, it might still be current, was that it was in the brain. I think it's like magnetite or something. It's essentially something that works kind of like an internal compass. The way we think about our compass working on the Earth, they have that in their body.
So it's kind of like my head needs to be facing this way as well. Yeah. Really,
yeah, wow. Exactly.
That's amazing stuff. We have a phone call here, so grab your headphones. We're talking to Jamie Stevens and John Alexander from the Klamath Bird Observatory. Here's a call from William in Sutherland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, I was just going to say, several years ago, I found a bullock's oriole nest after the leaves had fallen. So I climbed up, took it down, and it was almost completely built out of nylon fishing line. And it had a dead baby bird in it that got tangled in it.
And the nest was pretty much entirely a fishing line, you're saying?
Yeah.
Wow.
And I want to comment also that the bullock's oriole is swiftly disappearing from the Umpqua Valley. And the reason I know is I watch their nests after the leaves fall, and I don't see them anymore.
All right, William,
It's largely due to spraying.
Spraying. Okay, we'll talk about insecticides and pesticides and all that sort of thing. Thank you for the call, William. Very much appreciate that. So this sounds like exactly what you were talking about earlier, Jamie, where fishing line and other plastics end up getting used for making nests.
Yeah, exactly. Those are the types of materials that can appear to be a natural material that can be very handy for nest building, but it's introducing both textures and colors that are not normal for birds, and so the actual effect on weaving those types of materials into nests is largely still unknown, but we can see that it's not natural.
All right. So we shouldn't be encouraged that they're adaptable, because it actually sounds like it can be hurting them.
Yeah, I can't speak specifically about the bullock's oriole, but certainly in some of the other instances, plastics have been determined to not be helpful.
So we were talking about the large-scale declines in some birds in the region, the forest birds in particular, is that the ones you said? Mm-hmm. So we're talking about things like spotted owl size, that sort of thing?
The metric I was referring to was based on songbirds. Mm-hmm. And so while Klamath Bird Observatory does work a lot across a lot of taxa, a lot of our work is focused on the smaller birds that don't get so much attention by other people.
What's interesting about the forest songbirds is, you know, there's a range of different forest types, and the birds and the bird communities situate themselves across those forest types. So as we think about different kinds of forest management, we think about how did the many bird species that we're able to monitor at once tell us about forest conditions that are important for animals like the spotted owl. And also tell us about how we're able to change forests and maybe make them more suitable for the owl or other kinds of things, and be able to track many different bird species as we're trying to create these new forest conditions or improve forest habitats and use birds to tell us how well are we doing that. There's a lot of work right now happening with fire management and fuels reduction, and we're really using birds to help gauge and guide that management to make sure that we're creating sustainable and resilient systems there, and using birds as indicators to do that kind of work.
You're the first people involved in conservation work I've had in the studio since the biodiversity report came out earlier this week that paints a fairly grim picture of things like habitat loss, deforestation, that sort of thing. And I wonder, just in your own digestion of it, either as an organization or as individuals, what you've been making of it.
Well, we've all been, we just doubled in staff size this week, and everybody's in the field training. So we haven't, as a staff, been able to sit down and talk about this report yet, because most everyone's in the field. But I think that what I was listening to and what I'm hearing is there are solutions to these issues. So similar to be the solution to plastic pollution, there are things we can do about our agriculture to make our agriculture more sustainable. There are things, and we're using our science to help guide that kind of those kind of decisions that we need to make. So it's really about using the science and making decisions and then measuring our ability to reverse these distressing trends that are ultimately going to be hurtful to humans as well as the rest of the world, because we all live on it together.
But applying science also involves making some political decisions. And how confident are you in that process to yield the results the planet and the people need?
It's going to take political will. And I was on a plane the other day with We do science. We don't do a lot of politics. And I was on a plane with one of our representatives, and I had a discussion with him, and I said, you know, I don't know if we would agree personally on the decisions that are made, but I think we could agree on the information that can be used to make those decisions. And ultimately, people make decisions, and they say, am I going to choose to do better by the world, or am I going to choose to do better by the given decision that I need to do right make right now, whether it be to get more money for some sort of situation or whatnot. So hopefully, with more and more information, the people will realize that our fate is dependent on the health of the world. We had at the Bird Observatory Conference I was telling you about, there was a fellow who gave a keynote who was on the space station for 122 days, and he said when he landed, the first thing he thought was that there are no passengers on the spaceship Earth. We are all crew.
Right, a good point. Jamie Stevens, have you had a chance to digest the report yourself?
Actually, I'm one of the staff members that's been out in the field for pretty much 3 days straight. So I heard blips of it in the early morning hours when I was heading out into the forest, but I have not.
So in terms of things like Williams' observation that he's not seeing much of the Bullock's Oriole anymore, are we seeing birds in the region that haven't been here before?
That gave me a bit of pause. Birds in the so we are definitely one of the things that's interesting about the Klamath Siskiyou bioregion is that we are on kind of they refer to it here as the Klamath Knot, where we have all these different ecosystems coming together and we have this unique climate. And so we do tend to be on the northernmost end of some of the species ranges. And so we are seeing some movements up kind of between here, Jackson County, and north of here of a handful of species where we're the northernmost end of their range. As far as something entirely new to the area, we have the Eurasian collared dove that's moved across the country in the last decade or so. But not huge, really, differences in what birds are here on a broad scale.
Okay, just declines in what you've got already. So so we are talking about Rogue Valley Bird Day Festival in North Mountain Park in Ashland Saturday. What time are you getting set up out there?
We're starting at 8 mm-hmm. until 12. There's going to be guided bird walks. As Jamie mentioned, our banding station is going to be there for the public to observe bird banding.
Yeah, the banding station will be open from 8 to 10:30. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so a chance for getting the whole family involved at as an observance of World Migratory Bird Day. The Klamath Bird Observatory is based in Ashland. John Alexander is the executive director. Jamie Stevens is the science director. Thank you both for joining us once again on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.
Thanks.